This is the Marketing Development Podcast, brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy, the online community designed to help you develop your marketing business, skills, and career by exploring the world of marketing and entrepreneurship. Here is your host, Pete Everett.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am going to be answering a little bit of a personal question. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. It's nothing sort of risque or anything like that. I'm not going that far. But I've recently been listening to a book, which is a book by a bloke called Paul Jarvis, and it's entitled A Company of One. It was recommended by, I believe it was recommended to me by Imogen Allen. So Imogen, if you're listening, thank you for the recommendation. It was brilliant, actually. I really enjoyed it. I do listen to a lot of audiobooks rather than reading physical books, just because I don't have the time to sit down and actually engross myself in reading, whereas audiobooks kind of fit into other parts of life. And right at the end of this book, I'm not going to spoil it for you, and I would recommend you go and get it. There's a link in the show notes. But at the end of this book, Paul asks the question, how would he start again? And I thought it was a really, really engaging question, actually, because he didn't ask, what would you do differently, like, with the context of now. Instead, he asked, how would he start again? And it got me thinking a little bit, you see, because hindsight is a brilliant thing. We all say, oh, if only I'd known that earlier. Hindsight can be a brilliant thing, but it can also be a curse. And we're all in business to make life better for ourselves. In a moment, I'm going to talk about something we've spoken about before, which is that picture of success. But in order for us to grow and in order for us to move on, regret is one of those things that can hold us back. And I don't want to make this too heavy. I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad or you know, set them off on a spiral of negative thoughts or anything like that. It's just simply to acknowledge that hindsight, whilst it can be a good thing and we need to learn from our experiences, it's one of those things that we cannot go and change the past. And that's really the crux of it. That's really the truth that's in there behind it. You can't change the past, even if you wish that you had done. But you can shape your future. And in order to shape your future, it often works best if you have a picture in your mind of a goal or a vision of what you want life to be, or something that you are aiming for that's seems to be a little bit untouchable. We can all have grand dreams. You know, I'd love to own an Aston Martin. The reality of it is that my life isn't going to be any richer or smaller if I don't get the Aston Martin. But the, you know, that is something that I would just simply like to do. It's maybe not quite what I'm talking about, though, in terms of a goal or something to reach for when we're thinking about starting our business or restarting our business again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you probably about half a dozen things here, which are my vision and the reasons that I set up my company and the reasons that I get out of bed and that I work so hard and that I spend time away from my family in order to, you know, to achieve these things. These are the things that I have as my goals. And I'm not going to be apologetic at all that some of them are a little bit selfish, not personally selfish for my family, because, you know, at the end of the day, the four of us, myself, my wife, and my two children, they are the reason that I do what I do. So I'm not going to make any apologies for that. So the reasons that I, or my vision, the reasons that I do what I do. The first one is I want to be mortgage free by the time I'm 41. The reason I've chosen 41 is that that's the year before my first son would go to university. So it's going to be a bit of a milestone time in our lives where things are going to be changing anyway. I presume he's going to go to university anyway. Let me put that on. He might decide to do something completely different, and that's fine. But that's kind of the benchmark I had in my life. He'll be 18. Let me put it that way. So I've got, I want to be mortgage free by the time he's 18 so that I can help him and help his younger brother, who will be a couple of years behind him, explore what they want to in life. I don't want to have the shackles of a mortgage by the time I'm 42, let me put it that way. I want to retire from everyday business, in inverted commas, between the ages of 50 and 55. So I've got to give myself a little bit of leeway on that one. In the UK, at least, there's a massive push at the moment for the increase in the retirement age and the age that the state pension is going to be given. And I don't want to get involved in that. I want to quit that like 10, 15 years before I even have to think about it. So, you know, so I've got an end plan in goal. I want to get to a place as soon as I possibly can where my wife doesn't have to work. She works really hard. She works for us in our business. She runs our house. She keeps us all on the straight and narrow. She's an absolute gem. And life wouldn't happen without her. And I don't want her to feel like she has to start doing, you know, she has to be worried about money or earning money. I want her to be able to enjoy life, essentially. So I want to get to that phase. The reality of it is, sorry, sweetheart, if you're listening. The reality of it is that we may need to be mortgage free before we get to that point. But, you know, I want to get to a point where she doesn't feel that she has to work. Anyway, if she wants to work. The other thing with my wife is, and now really I'm going off on a tangent. The other thing with my wife is she has other ideas of things she wants to do. And I want her to be able to explore those and to maybe even set up her own little business or side hobby, whatever it could be, doing those things that she loves doing. I either want to live or I want to have a holiday home by the sea. Now, I live in Sheffield, which if you get a map of England or the map of the UK, Sheffield's smack bang in the middle. It is as landlocked as you can be on this little island of ours. So I either want to go and move and live somewhere by the sea, or I want to have a holiday home that's on the seaside. And I want to have the freedom, if it's the latter, I want to have the freedom to be able to work from either location. I want to drive a nice car. Now, this one really is a bit personal or a bit selfish, I suppose. I've always been a petrol head, hence the Aston Martin comment earlier. I've always been a petrol head. I love cars. They make me tick. And because of that, I want to drive a nice one. And that's about basically as far as it goes. I want to make memories for my children. I want them to be able to look back and not to say, well, we couldn't do this because dad was working, or we couldn't do this because we didn't have enough money. I want them to have a variety of memories. I want them to become rounded human beings. I want them to experience the good of this world. I also want them to be aware of the not so good. I want them to experience things like life in a place like Africa, where technology isn't so in your face, and but people are far more grounded to the earth and to nature. I want them to have this whole experience, for example. And of course, all of that essentially comes down to money and what you can afford to do. And that kind of leads me on to the very last one, which is I want to be in a position where money isn't an issue for my family or for what we want to do. That's not to say that I want to be stinking rich, okay? I'm not after the sort of million in the bank. That's not who I am, and it's not it's not a goal that drives me to do that. But I do want to get to a place where money isn't a regular, you know, money isn't an issue, where if we want to do something, we can go and do it. And we don't need to scrimp and save on particular things, but we maybe don't have the best of it either. I hope you understand what I'm saying. So that's my vision for life there in a nutshell. I hope you don't judge me for it. It's who I am. It's what I want to achieve, and it's what I want to achieve for the people that are closest to me. I feel a little bit kind of emotional actually sharing that. I'm surprised myself. I have those seven things. That's how many there are. I have those seven things written down. It's on a piece of paper that's on my desk at work, and I have it as a note in my phone. And if I ever need some kind of direction, or if I'm having one of those days where I just think, you know what, I just can't be bothered. We all have them, let's be honest, where I think, I just can't be bothered. I just want to go home. I want to go and watch trashy telly. I want to go and do something. You know what, I get like this, I just have a look at the list and it reminds me why I do what I do. And yeah, sorry, it really is. My mind's just going, I'm not going to edit any of this out. I feel a bit odd having shared that, I must admit. But anyway, it's that is the master plan from me. So if I was then looking to restart my business, if I was going to start my business again, the very first thing I would do is plan out what is success? What is success to you? What are the 6 or 7 things that you want to achieve? Give some of them time limits if you can, because that really does focus the mind. But then, you know, some of them can be a little bit more open-ended. That's fine. The very next question is, how are you going to get there? And that is the starting point for where you would restart your business. So I'm not saying the rest of this podcast is entirely hypothetical. I am not restarting my business again. Please don't write that as headlines. Please don't take this as a... I'm not even going to put that as clickbait as the title of this episode. Let me put it that way. I am not restarting my business again. But hypothetically, if I was going to do it, what's the process that I would go through? And I really hope some people find some value in what I'm about to say, because either maybe you're looking to start up your own thing and you're unsure of what to do, or maybe you've got your own thing and you're at one of those positions where it's not working, you feel like you need to pivot a little bit or you need to change tack a little, you wish you could go back to the drawing board and start again. Well, look, this is the process that I would go through, and there's 12 steps to it. So if you're driving, please don't stop and make notes. But if you do want to re-listen to this episode or go through this again, or you want to have a chat with me, just reach out in the Facebook group, peteveritt.com/group, and let's have a discussion about it, because I really do think that this is a logical way of doing it. It differs a little bit from the process that Paul mentions in his book, A Company of One, but that's fine, okay? So the very first thing I would do is I would identify my most marketable skill. So if I'm starting a new business, I don't want to be worried about having to learn new skills on the job. For starters, that sort of leads to semi-disingenuous kind of marketing on your behalf, on my behalf. And secondly, you know what? I've not got time to worry about learning new skills. If I'm starting a new business, I need to make sure that I get from zero money to profit as quickly as I possibly can. And that means doing something that I know I can already do. So if this was me, that would sit somewhere between either web development or SEO work, because they're the two big skill sets that I have and the two sort of areas that I major in that I can do already. That's absolutely fine. I'm not, by the way, going to take you through the process of keeping lean or registering your company for legal purposes or any of that. I'm presuming that's all a given. This is the mental process I would go through we're going to get on some practical process that I go through in order to start again. So the first thing, what's your most marketable skill? For the purpose of this example, I'm saying web development / SEO. So now I've got that skill, I identified who it is. I need to then identify how I can demonstrate the most value to a potential new customer as fast as I possibly can. So I need to make my process simple. I need to have a direct message about what it is I'm going to offer and how I'm going to offer it. And I need to get that out there and communicated to a new customer so that they know exactly what it is I'm buying. I'm not going to go out there and say, hey, I can do all web development for you. No, instead, I might say I can develop a WordPress plugin for you, or I can develop, I could develop a new website for you, although starting a business, that might be quite a long sort of development process. So I may need to think about how that's going to work. what I would say, if for my hypothetical business sitting between website development and SEO, is I could say I'm going to demonstrate a return on investment to you as my new customer by increasing your inquiry rates. And I'm going to do that with your existing traffic and your existing website. So I'm going to figure out how this, that's what I'm going to sell. If you want to be a new customer of mine, I'm now looking for companies that want to increase their inquiry rates on their website, who potentially don't want to have to go through the process of building a new website. Okay, fine. I then need to identify a niche or niche. I'm not American, it's niche. It's definitely niche. Niche or niches that have this problem. And ideally, the first niche or niches that I identify, now the point with niching down is you can always expand these at a later date, but please, please, please do not fall into the trap of thinking that you need to serve everybody. You don't, and that frankly will dilute everything that you've already decided to this point so far, and it will ultimately slow you down and hinder you. It's better to go a mile deep and an inch wide than an inch wide and a mile than a mile wide and an inch deep. You know what I'm saying? If that is too narrow, you can always expand expand to another niche, or you can always expand this bit a little bit. But it's better to expand at a rate that you control than it is to start with a completely open net and then try and struggle to clamber back to some form of clarity. So that, identify the niche. I would then validate this idea by working for 3 clients completely free of charge. Now, what I should probably say is I would get this far in my process whilst working at another job or having another form of income. So if that means that you've already got a business and it's not exactly how you want it to be, it may mean that for, you know what, another month or 6 weeks, you might just have to put up with the operational structure that you've got at the moment, keep those clients happy, and then work on this in the background. But I would not have a financial burden on myself up until this point, because I don't want the need for money, the desperation for money to be my driving force. This has to be right for me and for all of those things that I want to achieve in life. This has to be right. So for my example company, I'm going to use business-to-business companies where they have owner managers. So essentially the owner still works in the business. He's normally the MD or chief exec or CEO, whatever title he's given himself, at the top of the tree. And it's his business is a business-to-business business. I've just said the word business quite a lot, and there you go, I've just gone and said it again. So I'm now at stage 4, which is I'm going to go and find 3 B2B business owners who manage their own company, and I'm going to offer to increase their inquiry rates on their website using a mixture of web development and SEO for absolutely free of charge. And I'm going to put a time frame on this so that it doesn't go overboard. And I'm going to say that I'm going to do this work within 2 weeks, and that I will then wait another 4 weeks in order to monitor inquiry rates to demonstrate an increase. Okay, so that's a 6-week cycle, and I'm going to use 3 clients. Because I'm at another job, I'll probably do 1 client, and whilst when I do the first 2 weeks to actually do the work, before when they enter the month of tracking, I then start client 2, and when they enter the month of tracking, I then start client 3. So I'm now looking at a 12-week window in order to get, just less than that, 10-week window in order to process my three free clients. I will identify the process for these clients that I'm going to start with. Now, this could change based on feedback that I get from them, but my process, this is item 5, my process is going to be, I'm going to start with an SEO health check. I'm going to review the user experience on the website and see if there's any barriers to inquiries, basically conversion rate optimization. And then I'm going to review the current landing pages, the bounce rates, the user interaction on those pages, and see what the second part of conversion rate optimization here. So see what the barriers are, see what the opportunities are for the clients, the inquirers to make their inquiry, and basically iron out that process so that we're getting better quality of traffic in at one end, and we're going to have then a smooth process for getting an inquiry out the other. That's going to be it. Finally, I'm then going to put a reporting metric in place, and that reporting metric is going to detail everything that I've done. I'm not going to hide a single thing. It's going to be completely transparent and open, but it's also going to demonstrate the value that I have added to their company. And for these first three clients, that value is going to be given free of charge. All I want back from them is an honest, open review of what I've done, potentially a testimonial at the other end if it's gone particularly well. And that's it. That's it. We shake hands, and you know what? I'm going to keep in touch with those people, because those three people are the first three people in my new audience for my marketing. Okay? So I hope that doesn't all sound too complicated. I've tried to keep it as easy as I possibly can. That is how I would go about identifying what my new business is going to be like. And if I got to service those three free clients and it had completely fallen down on its head, you know what? I never need to speak to those three people again. I can go straight back to the drawing board, back to number one. Money isn't an issue because I'm still working somewhere else. I might not like it very much, but I'm still working somewhere else. And I can go back to the drawing board and start again. Go through exactly the same process, tweaking a few things. Let's then say that I'm quite happy with the way that those three clients have gone. What I'm then going to do is productize this service. So if this has worked and I know that my my process of running an SEO health check, optimizing the website for user experience, and then reviewing analytics to data in order to iron out those barriers to inquiry. If I know that's this magic formula that I'm going to have to sell this going forward, that's going to be my process. I can then productize this with a report on the other end. I can productize this and sell that product for a reasonable fee. And that I'm now at a point where I can start charging some money for this. So I don't know. I will come up with the Pete Everett inquiry, B2B inquiry. I'm trying to think of the word off the top of my head. Inquiry booster. That's going to be my product, the B2B inquiry booster. And I'll make my own website. I'll intro who I am. I'll do all the personal stuff. I'll have done some keyword research of my own to know what people are searching for. More than that, those three people, I will ask them what the pain points were they had in their business. And you know what? There's all my blog articles, all my titles written. I just simply write the content for them. I will have a marketing sort of, we'd call it a funnel, but you know, a lead generation system put in place. So that would mean that people could drop their email in a box, maybe for a little download of my top five SEO things to look out for on your B2B website. I'd send them through a chain of emails, and then I might decide that I'm going to sell this for, I don't know, 850 quid. That's it. All of a sudden, I've now got a machine that can take cold traffic and turn it into a paying customer, and I don't really have to touch it too much. I'm only bothered about delivering those products back to customers when they buy them. That's essentially it. So yeah, that's what I would do. Test the theory in as short a time scale as I possibly can, productize it, and then sell that product. Now, we all know from that there's hundreds and thousands of different services you can have through web development. I could then start thinking, you know what, I know a designer, or I can speak to a service like Tiago, and I could maybe start building websites for people, because that would be a good upsell if people come with really dire websites. You know, we can do what we can for you through the Inquiry Booster product, but actually, you know, we could turbocharge this if you were to invest a bit more, and we could sell you a new website. So this is now the only point where I start thinking about auxiliary services or supplementary services or upsells, whatever you want to call them. I'm then going to put a marketing strategy in place. So I've got my website with my booster, inquiry booster product on it. I now need to get eyeballs on that. So I'm going to think about how I'm going to outreach. That could be writing blogs. It'll definitely be social media and participating in groups. Not in a spammy way, because that's the quickest way to get knocked out of a group, and don't try that in mine. But participating in groups and actually showing genuine authority, reaching out to the owners or the admins of those groups, explaining who I am, what I do, that this is who I'm looking for, seeing if there's ways we could collaborate on that, do some lead generation that way. Going on podcasts. Once I've got some paying customers, I might decide to invest some of my new profit into some pay-per-click ads. I'd only do that if I was convinced that my lead generation system, my funnel, was working properly. I would never throw money at pay-per-click ads for a funnel that hasn't been tested properly. So I'd then put a marketing strategy in place. I would then go and give this some time, go and review my own results and then the pipeline of clients that are coming through. Now, am I just getting a trickle? Have I got an absolute deluge of them? In which case, that's great, but I might need some help. What does my new business look like? How is it shaping? I've put so much hard work into making this engine to achieve my goals that I don't want to lose control of it. So I need to make sure that I'm constantly reviewing my own results and the pipeline that's coming through. As I get more and more clients through, I then need to build time into my own schedule to make sure I refine my processes and my price, my client base. You know, we mentioned right up at the top that if this isn't working, you might want to identify another niche. So I've done B2B businesses with owner managers, for example. So I might want to then extend that to B2B businesses with non-owner managers that have a chief exec at the top or an appointed MD rather than the owner as their MD. I might want to maybe go into a particular type of B2B company. So that might be business insurance, or it might be, haulage companies. It could be absolutely anything. But I can identify what those niches are, and I can grow then at a rate that I am in control of. And that's really the key to this. It's the control at every point with the ability to think, that's not working for me, and jump back a few steps and refine from there. That was step 11. Believe it or not, or everything I've just said has got us to step 11. Step 12 is to then repeat steps 3 to 11 over and over and over again until I've built a business that I'm happy with, that is serving me and the lifestyle that I want to lead. Maybe I only want to work 3 days a week. So you know what? I don't need loads and loads and loads of clients. I just need a handful, but it needs to be a steady stream of a handful. Maybe I want staff. Maybe I actually want to have, an office with people around me because I hate working on my own. So you know what? I'm going to need a hell of a lot more of these things to sell, but we can start offering more complicated things around it. Really, the world is your oyster at that point, but at least you've taken a considered approach to get there. So I'd love to know what you thought of this episode. I'd love to know what actions you've taken, either in setting up your current business, and whether anything I've said has rung a bell with you, or whether it's just been a load of mumbo jumbo. But I'd especially like to talk to you. And if you don't want to put it in the group, you want to private message me, that's absolutely fine. I'd especially like to know, for those people that are either just starting out or want to pivot their business, if any of what I've said has made any help or any sense to you. And if we can support each other through that, then let's do it. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. It's been a pleasure to record it, and I'll speak to you next week.